Welcome to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld podcast, where we try to figure out if it would be possible to run Westworld as an actual business. This exercise is going to cover the entire show, so be aware, spoilers will follow. Also, we're talking about running Westworld as a functioning business. This isn't a criticism of the story itself, as we understand there's dramatic license at work here. Please don't send us hate mail.
Hi, and welcome back to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld. With me today are Chris Nelson, Tom Ara, Pat Swanson, and I'm Joe Carlin. Today we're going to be talking about building corporate security. Chris, you've got some experience in this.
I've never built corporate security before.
You're a liar and you know that.
So, building in corporate security. We've discussed previously making sure that the employees of Westworld are safe and some of the things that we see where that isn't happening and how we'd approach that. Today, what we're going to be tackling is how do we ensure beyond, you know, general employee safety, make sure that the clients are safe and that some of the safety that one normally extends to your client base is also extended to your staff as well.
So I think we can actually kind of divide this up in a couple different parts. We see that, especially since you're talking about the guests that come into the park, right? They're actually interacting with the park in two different ways, right? First, they come in through the shuttle and they're actually in what looks to be the Mesa facility, right? That's where they essentially is, I guess we'd call it guest intake. I don't know. It's their arrival area and they have to get, you know, their costume on and their clothes and everything else that they're getting ready to get into the park. And then there's the actual entrance into the park area, and, you know, getting on the train. And then finally, we make our way into the park. So does it make sense to divide those up when we're talking about the guests and the security and the things that we need to do in those stages and then maybe transfer it over to the employees?
Sure. I think that that's a great division of those areas of responsibility. I think the primary caveat that we have there is that the security of them being the guests or the clients, however you want to refer to them, needs to be 100% addressed throughout all of these stages. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily have good safeguards in place that we can see throughout any of these. Knowing is how we like to talk about what Westworld did right, and my consummate answer is not very much. But yeah, we'll break it down here. Let's kind of work inside out. Okay, so we'll start with inside the park itself. What kind of security measures do we have in place to ensure the safety of our guests, make sure that they are not in an environment that's going to cause bodily harm to them? Pat?
So we see when William is in the intake facility, there's a sentence about the survey and research that they've done on the guests. So I think right there suggests that they've done at least a little bit of research to make sure that this person, you know, can handle the experience that they're going to give them.
So you're looking at security a different way, where it's not about making sure that the guest is okay while they're you know, interacting with bits and pieces of our park, but you're just looking at it from the sense of, can the person even handle the experience that I'm about to give them? Which I think is an interesting way to kind of look at things.
Well, I think it is a little different. Maybe that's not the way you guys wanted to take this, but there's an interaction here between these guests and the park. And if you're going to make this be safe for the guests, I think you have to somewhat take into account who you're putting in this place.
That's fair. I think that establishes a good baseline for how we handle some corporate security policies moving forward. And let's come back to the corporate security aspect and focus for now just on the aspect of inside the park itself, how we're handling the guests, how we're approaching all of that. So we know that we have people that we now presumably vetted, per what Pat said, and we've entered them into an area where we have some technology in play. We have a range of experiences that are available to all of these guests, and we just need to make sure that nothing is coming into play that could potentially harm them. How do we do that? Do we see anything that currently is going on that could harm the guests? Take it from where you got it.
Yeah, this isn't really an answer to the question that you asked, which is why I paused. But one thing that I noticed that they did do is that they made the center of the park the safest part of the park, and that if a guest wants to, they can venture out into the, you know, more and more risky areas. They've basically designed this park to be opt-in to the level of danger you're willing to take on. Now, hopefully that's coupled with legal documents, you know, signings, NDAs, things of that, well, not NDAs, but you get what I mean, that the company is appropriately secure in the event that someone opts into more than they can handle. But I think they've structured the concentric rings of the park with danger being further out and making it opt-in in a way that puts more of the responsibility for harm on the guest rather than on the park, which seems like not enough, of course, but a good practice at least.
Look at that. We found something that did right for a change.
I am also flabbergasted, but willing to concede that Pat is right here. So with that in mind, we know that they've set up some sort of system to where, you know, there's an escalating series of dangers that potentially maybe that is the framework that we set up there, right? It's, you know, that you have to sign waivers when you undertake certain activities. If you're going to a company, is a real world analogy, if you're going to a company that maybe performs bungee jump services, you have to sign some sort of waiver removing them from being liable in case you injure yourself horribly. So maybe that's what we have in place, is some sort of document that legally protects the company if customers are willing to take on extensive risk and put themselves into situations that way maybe not explicitly be harmful to them, but have the potential to do so.
Okay, I'm thinking that one time I jumped out of a perfectly good airplane, but the scariest part was signing all the paperwork beforehand. It basically said, even if their aircraft had blown up in the air, or if their parachutes had failed to deploy and I had plummeted to my death, it was my own fault, and I had my estate, anybody that was there after me, had no legal recourse. How well does that actually hold up, or is that just a scare tactic to say, hey, don't try anything?
I don't know, but who's listed as your beneficiary on your forms?
Not you. I'm sorry. My youngest sister.
Well, I'm 100% less interested in this part of the conversation. No, I think that's a fair statement. It's something we would need to take into consideration. We can put whatever we want on paper and have people sign it, but whether or not we have the legal standing to make sure that that actually holds true or not is something that would need to be investigated.
And we've put in some effort into having a group of people in this discussion that have covered some of the areas in software. You know, we've got product, we've got former dev, agile QA. It shows here a little bit that we're missing sort of the legal perspective.
We need a lawyer.
When we touch on some of these issues, I don't know any better than you guys how legal contracts like that are, if they actually hold up. But I've got to think that there's some amount of negligence beyond which it doesn't matter what the guest signed. I would hope that would be the case. But of course, it's the law. I could be wrong.
So let's take that into account. Let's say beyond whatever pieces of paper were sliding in front of them, we are going to be held liable if something happens, such as guest death, which, as we've seen in the show, having people killed by hosts is not completely out of the question. Sometimes it's program functionality. So how do we account for that?
It's a feature, not a bug.
It's a feature, not a... Man, I almost repeated that verbatim, and that pains me.
To Ford, it is a feature.
That's true.
That's fair.
To Ford, it is a feature. I think that with that in mind, that we need to have some sort of protections. We need to make sure that we have a security presence that can handle. We've mentioned before having some sort of reaction force, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. on campus in order to handle medical and or other security needs. If we have, beyond just the potential for host interactions with guests to go awry and needing some sort of security presence around there or some sort of medical support. Medical support, I think we can, none of us have a background in that. I'm sorry for listeners of this podcast, but we would have some sort of medical support group in place that could react to, thank you, that could react to certain elements of what comes up. We would also need some sort of security force that could likewise either resolve any situations that arise with the host to immediately remove the guest from danger, or not just guest on host or host on guest problems, but we haven't spoken yet about guest on guest issues either. Much in the same way that if you're running a nightclub where everyone is supposed to be there to enjoy themselves simultaneously, those have staff in place to ensure the safety of all your patrons and the safety of the company or organization that is running all of the facilities. You need something similar in this. You would need more, arguably. Coming from my perspective, I previously worked in organizations where you're dealing at most hundreds of people throughout the course of a night. Maybe many hundreds of people, but hundreds of people throughout the course of the night, and you need to make sure that they are not either harming themselves or harming the business interests and any of that thing. We have a much wider area and a much larger scope in this. How much of a security presence do we require and able to feel secure that we're monitoring everyone accurately and ensuring that no one is coming to harm?
So I think we've got a line to walk here on immersion versus safety. But I think that we don't have to sacrifice all that much to provide a significant improvement in what we see from the show. We see Dolores at one point when her dad is ill. She runs into town. She's, rattling the door of the doctor's office and then is, trying to find anyone. Well, there's a fantastic opportunity. The guests can't tell the difference between a host and a human being anyway. The doctor probably ought to be a human being. Mm-hmm. You ought to have people who are actors in here that happen to also be, say, a medical professional. And so if someone in town gets hurt, there, you've got immersion, you've got medical experience. Now, you're not going to be able to provide that everywhere out in the rest of the park because there's a lot that's far away, but in the most well-tread area, I think you could provide that at relatively low cost to immersion.
I think you're right. And I would love to see the doctor try and fix somebody's broken bone that's sticking out of the skin with the tools that they had in Westworld. Basically anything they see laying around.
Well, I'm assuming that they'd actually have medical equipment with them. It's just,
you're breaking immersion.
There is a trade-off there. We can't risk the lives of the guests to do it. However, it could be, two people that just saw it and were not standing right next to the person being treated. They might just think someone got hurt. A doctor is caring for them. They might not even know that anyone involved was a human being.
Well, and that's kind of a last ditch solution here is we know that there's kind of the access area underneath all of Westworld, right, where they can kind of pop up, obviously in given spots and developed spots. But even if somebody is well outside of the developed towns, they've got a kind of a last ditch effort to get somebody over into that area pretty quickly. So it's not used that way really in the show, but being that we know that the hardware is there that's available, we can kind of use that as a backup.
I think that everything that's being proposed here is spot on. I think that while the immersion factor that Joe is questioning here a little bit, where do you draw the line? At the same time, as much as you can try and move that line, you should. One of the things
safe word.
Oranges is always the safe word. But getting back to it, so to use again an analogy from my own personal experience, if you're working in a club, the approach that you have with your security staff is do not ruin the enjoyment of the patrons as much as possible. Activity that is not
harmful.
I wouldn't say not harmful. I would say activity that is not desired. So those harmful acts, whether it be guest-on-guest violence or someone becoming ill, someone needing medical attention, as much as possible, you want to remove that from the visibility of the rest of the patrons. If you're having guest-on-guest difficulties or a crime, you want to make sure that no one else is witnessing that. If you need to actually take security measures against one of the guests, you want to make sure that as much as possible, no one is seeing that. If someone is injured, you want to make sure that, yes, you're addressing it as quickly as possible, but you also want to make sure, again, no one is seeing that. Anyone who is in this environment that's paying this money, and we see this in much lower scenarios. We're talking about people even at a bar, which arguably is a much lower expense rate than people are paying for this park. You don't want to disrupt the mood that they have because you end up with negative outcomes. Now, that's a little bit of walking a line between providing the safety for all of these people and the business decision, but it's a realistic one that we need to take into account.
So do we want to talk about here some ways that they could do that in the park while trying to not to sacrifice immersion?
I think Tom's already touched on some of it. I think you've already touched on some of it. Yeah. I think, you know, either having staff nearby that are able to address a situation while either looking like people you would expect to see in the park, or if you have an ability to quickly whisk someone away to access tunnels, whatever they may be, so they're out of sight, easily, quickly addressed. All of this stuff is important. Now, the key on all of this is that in order to accurately and quickly address these types of situations, you need to have very effective, something that we've already talked about previously, monitoring. If your security staff or your monitoring staff is not catching these things or identifying them before they happen, it is impossible to do any of the things we're talking about. If you can't predict and identify when these situations are beginning to occur before they've gone into full-blown emergencies, you're not going to be able to do anything that we've talked about.
So in terms of applying that general set of guidelines to the park, I would say anytime you've got guests in groups going on, they have these quests that we see a few times, a couple of hooks, and then we see, I think, a couple that goes off in the woods trying to catch some outlaws. I would say that anytime that we have guests that don't know they're with other guests, you need a plant. You need a security, a member of the security team that is a deputy, you know, they're out with the sheriff, I think, in one of those quests. Or you need the rangers nearby, and I'm putting air quotes around that. The technicians ought to have horses down in those, you know, right by those lifts that they have so they can ride out and get wherever they need quickly. It's a bunch of extra work, but I think we talked before about the risk of one guest scalping another, and you really can't have that. I think you need somebody there that is authorized to use force to stop someone, or else it's just a matter of time until you have some violent altercation and people only discover that it's guest on guest way too late.
It adds another level of security we need to provide, though, then, right? Or in this case, do we talk about the guests really, or I'm sorry, the security people that we're talking about adding in here, essentially falling in the same boat or category as the other guests, right? Now at this point, we've got hosts, real human employees, and guests in the park. Do we have different rules against all of them? How do we take care of all this?
Well, I think we have a couple of different approaches on this. One of the scalping one, I'm going to admit I haven't come up with an answer on yet. I've still been mulling this over. But we see plenty of firearms use throughout the course of the show. And it becomes clear that there are safety guards in place to ensure that, at least to a degree, the firearms are extremely effective against the hosts. They're not effective against other people. So there's some degree of, you know what you're getting mm-hmm. with that kind of approach. By the same token, as far as embedding employees within the groups of guests and handling all that, federal air marshals would probably be the closest analog that That's I can fair. Come up with. I mean, you have law enforcement people that are embedded within, and you know, it's more of the private security force, but you have them embedded within acting as standard guests mm-hmm. so that they're there to interject as needed. There are probably some other policies we want to put into place. If we want to go line by line on all the security policies that we want to put into place, we'll probably be here for another few hours, or at least I will.
That's it.
Yeah, Della should pay us at that point.
Or HBO.
If I'm getting paid, I want it to be real money, not paid by a fictional company.
At least comp us for some free time in the park.
After what I've seen at the park, no thanks.
So again, I think that there are some analogs there that we have between analogs is right. So again, I think we have some analogs there between the status of things in the park and some things we see in the real world that can address a lot of this stuff. Bringing it back once more, if we did have the effective monitoring in place, we could address all of that. If we can predict or at least have some sort of view into what's happening, we can quickly react. And as we know from previous experience in our own software development work, the earlier that you catch a problem, the less expensive it is for you on the back end. Mm-hmm. The earlier in the process that you're able to head something off, and this is true in both security and software development work, the earlier and less costly it is to fix said problem. Much like if we're able to find defects early in the process, it's less expensive than if it makes it all the way to production, as we've discussed earlier in this show. If we can find problems with the guests and their safety soon, then it doesn't become the expensive liability that it becomes if a guest scalps another guest. So we need to be able to approach those in a proper fashion and make sure that we have everything in place to protect that. Stepping back, as we have now talked about earlier, is Tom brought it up. If we're breaking the park apart into certain elements, we've got the interior of the park that we've now pretty much thoroughly covered. Yeah. Tell us if you don't agree. We also have the exterior of the park, the Mesa facility structure itself. How do we handle the different security aspects of that? And I think that this goes beyond just guest security. I think this is where we start seeing some of that corporate security that Joe mentioned at the beginning of the podcast today. We need to have multiple layers of security involved in this aspect to protect not only the guests as they are entering the facility, but also the company as a whole, both its employees, its intellectual property, and the like.
It seems pretty clear, at least given in the show, there's no real good way, at least that Westworld has, of tracking who is in the building and where they are in the building. And this, especially when you're in any type of manufacturing organization, which essentially Mesa facility is, I mean, that's a big deal. If there's something that goes wrong on the floor, you need to know where everybody is and you know, what condition they're in order to assess the situation. And you know, when we see the body techs essentially walking around with a host who's not supposed to be on and just walking from floor to floor without any security procedures, even simple things just like having badge level access to certain areas of the facility would take care of simple things like this. But it's pretty clear, obviously, for the show, for the dramatic effect. But these are just the simple things that can be done in order to make sure that people aren't where they're supposed to be, right? We wouldn't allow a guest to be walking around the production floors. So why not have just these basic things in place?
Right. And I would say that the this is a missed opportunity, and it's on the level that's on par with how in the park, the facility, anybody in the facility doesn't know where any host is at any time or where any guest is at any time, which is potentially more physically dangerous. But you're right about inside the Mesa facility. This is terrible.
What I find particularly appalling here is that we know that this world already has software capable of basically perfect facial recognition because the hosts do it every time we see them interact. The facility ought to be able to know. I mean, you could hook up that same software to all of the cameras in the place and know, hey, this is the host that we've got in this place where they do not belong. We have a host from Westworld in Samurai World. Something's off. Like, there's no reason for this to require any human being whatsoever to catch.
Agree, 100%. I think that the more we keep moving through these discussions, the more that people that have been listening this whole time are probably going to realize that some of the things we're bringing up now very heavily touch on topics we've already addressed. We've already seen monitoring failures. We've already seen GPS failures. We've seen biometric failures. All of this stuff we've covered at length, but it compounds itself much more in your security processes. If you can't guarantee that, as Pat said, hosts are wandering around in places that they shouldn't be, if you can't guarantee that you know, as Tom has touched on, like where the guests are and who they're dealing with, none of this is going to work. You need to be able to clearly identify when these people are violating these sorts of policies, and by people, we're using a broad term here. Sorry, Joe. But we don't have anything in place in this park that can accurately cover any of this. We see either it's one of two things. Security is complicit and a lot of the failures that we're seeing throughout the park, especially in the case of things like outgoing signals that we see and what Elsie tracks down, you know, some of the rogue hosts that are wandering around that aren't on the map anywhere, they're either complicit or criminally negligible in terms of how they're handling the situation. We have an ops center that I don't really know what it's monitoring. We see in episode 10, when everything goes off the rails and the full Michael Crichton vision of how fiction plays out comes to bear, that you have an ops center that locks down and completely blinds them to the outside world. So now the small fraction of monitoring that you actually had in place is gone. You are completely blind during an active shooter situation, but hey, at least the people sitting in the ops center have some thick walls between them and all the problems, so they're completely protected. It's a complete and utter failure across the board. You have hosts running amok. People are dying. We're not even sending out an alarm to any of the people that are within this Mesa facility. Hosts are just walking around shooting people. You see people still at their desks. Like, there's been no sort of warning. You don't even have a fire alarm that goes off when some of this stuff is happening. I mean, there is no sort of warning whatsoever, but again, we know the ops center is locked down. So there was some sort of indication that everything had gone to shit, and yet we're not informing our employees. We're not informing the guests, because as we saw with Maeve standing around with all these people near the exit, people are being shot through a couple of doors away. No one's panicking, like the end of the world is happening and they need to flee the site immediately. No one's even aware. How good is the soundproofing in this building that no one is hearing shots fired? Ladies and gentlemen, if you have not heard a gun go off, it is not fucking quiet. I am flabbergasted that none of this is covered. And again, taking a step back, I'm sure there's a lot of dramatic license and we need to make sure that for good storytelling, yada, yada. I don't care anymore at this point. Like, it's just a shitty approach. It's poorly handled all around. We don't have corporate security that's protecting the intellectual property, as we've seen, again, with some of the signals that are going out, the fact that we have corporate espionage happening between the board and the regular employees. Security doesn't seem to do anything. And to take a step back and just say why I think this is all an issue, this is why your security organization doesn't report up through QA, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, so fixing who they report to isn't anything like a guaranteed fix of all of these problems.
It's a good start, though.
It should be addressed. And I do think there's a very big difference between the way that QA normally is supposed to think and the way that security is. I mean, security is supposed to be planning for black swan events, these hopefully rare, but very serious situations. But QA is not like that. They're planning for things that happen all the time. And these are two fundamentally different mindsets. They really don't belong together. So that said, it's not enough to fix the other problems that you've already called out. And to go and focus on securing intellectual property a little bit, so far as I can tell, security's plan for a host just walking out of the building is to blow its spinal column. Its C6, I think, is supposed to be a bomb, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which either disables the host or blows its head off. We're not entirely sure because we don't see the thing go off. It really depends on how powerful the explosive is. But there's nothing, there's even in this almost everything goes the way security wants kind of scenario, if I'm someone conducting industrial espionage, at that point, don't I just grab the head and walk out?
So we're not even going to get that far. There's no monitoring place to know that the host is leaving the freaking building anyways.
I think somebody would say something along the lines of, hey, there was an explosion. That's about as close as you can get to a monitor. Okay.
Wait, we don't know how big the explosion is.
One, we don't know how big the explosion is. And let's take a step back. The explosive is there. How are we tracking it? We've already established that we have no idea where the host is located.
We can remove it, though.
Well, we know that the body techs can remove it as the body is being built. We don't know what the trigger is. Is the trigger manual? Is it just when they leave a geofence? If it's when they leave a geofence, we should have some sort of tracking mechanism within the host itself so that we know the host is nearing and leaving the geofence. So we don't have any of that.
That's something really easy to implement and test. And frankly, I doubt that this is even in there. I bet it's something that they thought of, never implemented, and they're like, oh, yeah, you're good. You're good. It just seems like the Westworld stereotype.
It's a deprecated feature that no one knows is deprecated.
Wasn't annotated the right way in the code, sorry.
Right. Yeah, there's a bomb in there. How do you know? Yeah, somebody said something like when I started 10 years ago.
Yeah, 34 years ago, Arnold had this idea, right?
Who's Arnold?
Bernard, I'm sorry.
Oh, Bernard was here 34 years ago?
So another one of those failures that they have is, so if you expect all of your hosts to have this bomb in their neck, why is it even possible to print that? Well, but this part of the spine is actually in the neck. I got a picture here. It's like the bottom of the neck, C6. In any event, yes, it's the spine. This bomb in your spinal column. What is the legitimate situation in which you want to be able to print one that isn't a bomb? I mean, it's not like you have a backup bomb, to our knowledge. It's apparently totally allowed. No, you don't have to, and you can manually just remove it, and what?
No, let's just throw a spare C5 in there.
That's totally the same.
I mean, is she going to know the difference?
I guess technically I don't know the difference, so I guess I have to go and say maybe that can work, but I bet it doesn't.
For the purposes of what's happening, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the kind of thing that went into play here. That being said, why don't we have verification protocols in place that make sure that the hosts are being built the way they're supposed to be built? Is there not a test at the end where you're like, yep, the bomb is returning all green. We know it's in there. Nope. No sort of verification on that.
Probably
so we're like,
requires monitoring.
Right. Again, a thing we don't have. So like I said earlier, I think a lot of what we're seeing here is a culmination of failures that we see in many other aspects of the company. I think that there's a lot going in around the security that requires everything we've already talked about. You need to have firm policies and monitoring and testing and all this other stuff. Otherwise, you can't implement anything that protects you on the back end. At the end of the day, there are some major things that we would like to see done differently in the approach to security. I think that we realize that everything that we've talked about has really been, again, building up to how do we secure the company? How do we secure the guests? How do we make sure that everything is running not only efficiently and taking better approaches, but also safely and securely?
And all of that is in service to keeping the company around and having it be successful. Those things aren't goals in themselves, though they're close. You really do need to have them. It's about if the company gets sued for $1 trillion because it killed all of its guests, it's not going to be around anymore.
The closest personal analogy I can make here, and again, we know that anecdotes are the singular form of data, so I once had a conversation with someone working in security years ago where the point was made that if there's a failure in the security apparatus, you are not only putting your own job at risk, you are putting everyone's job at risk. So while making sure that you're adhering to the protocols that are enforcing security and doing everything that need to be done to protect the company are there, and you're thinking, I just need to protect my job by doing my job well. If you do your job poorly, everyone else that works there is at risk. We see this in episode 10. As all these failures keep happening, everyone in the park is now at risk. Not only the employees, but also the guests and also the future of the company, which is probably why we won't have a season 2 of this podcast. But it's something that needs to be taken into account for all companies. It's every company needs to be protecting itself and its client base as much as possible across all aspects of. At the end of the day, if you do any of the things that we've talked about wrong, or as in Westworld's case, you do all of them wrong, you end up with a non-defunct company at the end of it.
They're the Sony of entertainment theme parks.
I mean, they're more than just the Sony of entertainment theme parks.
Isn't Sony still a company? Is this? I don't remember the PlayStation's rising up and killing the players.
To find out more about this podcast and for the show notes of this episode, please go to dollarsandcentsofwestworld.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/dollarsandcentsofwestworld and on Twitter at _DASOW.
He's saying that the park itself is the Sony Entertainment of park handling. You know, it's like, you know how every once in a while Sony loses all your personal data, Target loses your personal data. They're doing that, but on a scale that gets everybody killed. You know, there was like the, Joe, you would know this. What was the band that had the club fire? Great White?
Great White.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like if you took the same company that allowed the Great White failure to happen, which was a tragedy, and then the Sony hacks and the Target hacks, and then you had the HR run by the same HR from Zenefits, and then you gave them the corporate responsibility of Uber, this is the kind of company we get. We see the problems that all of those cause individually. We know that creating some bastardization that uses all of those properties is just a recipe for catastrophic failure. I am now going to start referring to doomed companies as Michael Crichton experiments.
Hi, and welcome back to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld. With me today are Chris Nelson, Tom Ara, and Patrick Swanson. Today, we're going to be talking about buildings, corporate security.
I'm sorry, Chris, who are you?
I'm Joe Carlin. I'm sorry. Wow, I really missed myself. Yeah.
We're sorry, too.
I don't know if we are.
Sorry, not sorry.
All right, one more time.
No shit.